to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams and my co-host. And, you know, Sandy is, we're talking about, you know, whether people...
You explain it.
Well, whether people want to face reality.
Yeah.
I mean, do we face reality or are we in denial about it and we all think we're 40 years old or whatever and we just ignore the realities around us? And it seems to me that so much of the political problems we have today are the fact that people are looking at reality differently. We've got a bunch of people who believe that America is what they're experiencing, and they ignore the fact that a bunch of other people are experiencing an entirely different America. And I can say that from both sides of the tracks. You know, there are the people who are experiencing the prosperity, who are, in fact, realizing or have realized or have inherited the American dream. And there are those who would wish for the American dream, but for whom it is very, very difficult to achieve. And what we were talking about or have been talking about in the show is how much more difficult the American dream is to achieve today than it was to achieve in 1960 when you and I burst onto the scene as adults.
You know, Sandy, I don't think there's anybody who will call here and say that it is more difficult to obtain the American dream than it used to be. I can't believe there'll be one person who will call and say that, but here's a prime example. On Friday, Ron Johnson brought his campaign to the God Touch Milwaukee, a nonprofit group on the city south side, where he convened a roundtable discussion on the issue. Speaking of people who are out of touch, my macro solution, this is Ron Johnson, renewed faith, stronger families, more supportive communities, and school choice. So wait a minute. So to Ron Johnson, the answer to what you and I are talking about is renewed faith, stronger families, more supportive communities,
and
more school choice.
Well, let's unbundle those things, though. If you look at, like, stronger families and more supportive communities, yeah, those would be good things.
But
to
what
achieve.
Makes families strong?
Yeah, well, yeah. But then the question is, yeah. Let's get behind that and say, okay, how do we work in the direction of getting strong families to be stronger? What are the circumstances that might be required to help families strengthen or become stronger in environments where they currently aren't strong? Because you don't get to stronger families unless you are in a place where families aren't strong. And so, what he's stating is a bunch of conclusions, but not a bunch of policies. He's stating a bunch of wishes, but he's not explaining how it is we would get there other than wishing.
So, Sandy, how can it possibly be that Republicans and Democrats are on different street corners when it comes to this conversation?
Well, like I said, denial, you know, I think if Freud were here or some professional psychologist were here and talking about denial, he'd say that people go into denial because it fits with what they wish, what their wishes are, rather than what the realities are. And they want wish fulfillment to be achieved, and they want to deny the fact that it's not being achieved. So I deny that I'm as old as I am, and I'm 40. The bunch of Americans who are in Fat City want to deny that there's anything that they ought to be doing or experiencing or sacrificing in order to get the community in which they live to have a higher percentage of people living in Fat City. It's much more convenient to have a reality that you look at that points a finger at the people who are not experiencing that kind of prosperity and blame it on them. And of course, there's a kernel of truth to it. You know, there is definitely in America the capacity for people who work hard, who have a vision, who have a plan, who do linear sort of current day sacrifice in exchange for future advancement. There is a pathway for those people into prosperity. But the question is, what is the social and economic environment in which they must live in order to see that path, to be able to make those plans, to be able to accomplish that outcome?
So let me then add this caveat to that, and that's depending on the family you were born in.
Right.
It plays a major role in whether or not you're going to be successful or not in the society. For instance,
major is to underestimate the importance of that.
So if I'm born in a family where education is not important, hasn't been important, and it's been a struggle for my family generationally, the chances of me being able to understand that it takes long-term planning, there has to be a plan in place in order to be successful in America, that plays a major role in whether or not you're going to be successful, unless you are fortunate enough to come from that environment. Somebody outside of the family sees something in you and then cultivates you to become successful, to break the chain of what has happened in your family. Right? You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
But yet people don't look at that and they say, Well, if your parents didn't know anything about being successful, and so their parents didn't know, chances are, for the most part, that's kind of the way things are going to be generationally for you in this society. If you come from a family that's successful, dad was successful, granddad was successful, more is expected of you. And the lineage has some involvement in whether or not you're going to be successful. I think that certainly matters. We can't act like that doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, there's intergenerational transfer of wealth. There's also intergenerational transfer of outlook.
Right.
And intergenerational transfer of training and life experience. And it's all three of those things that can be lacking in some people's, in the birth luck of somebody.
Right.
Somebody's birth luck is to be born into a situation where there is no intergenerational wealth and there is no intergenerational transfer of this kind of understanding of how society works and can be worked to the advantage of an individual. So, you know, it's clear that success does require sacrifice today to achieve success tomorrow. But that's a lesson you have to learn, and you have to have explained to you how it is that you need to roll up your sleeves and do something today in order to achieve more success tomorrow. No one's a great athlete from the get-go. They all have to learn through practice, and no one can learn a foreign language without going through a process or math or anything else. But you have to understand that there is success at the end of that sacrifice to make the sacrifice worthwhile. That potential for success has to be real enough in your eyes so that you are willing to do the difficult thing today in order to achieve the success tomorrow. But that vision of success tomorrow is intergenerationally transferred to us.
Yes, that seed has to be planted.
Yes.
In people. And somehow, and especially today, because we're talking about the American dream.
Right.
In order to even reach the American dream, that has to be planted in people now. Never mind becoming wealthy. Just to even reach the American dream, that seed has to be planted.
Well, the seed has to be planted in a way that creates an outlook in the person's mind, the young person's mind, that it's achievable.
Yeah.
That if I do this, if I do X, then Y becomes possible. And so X involves studying in school. It involves going to school every day. It involves a bunch of things that might not be, in the strict scheme of things, fun, or they might be difficult in a way, but those difficulties or that forsaking of fun or the imposition on oneself of discipline becomes worth it if we're in pursuit of something that we can achieve.
So let me put it this way. I have talked with so many children in my life and continue to do that and mentor them. And I can talk to them about, Johnny, you got to get an education and you got to do all these things. And Johnny is saying, hey, man, I'm moving from here to here, from here to there. I don't have any decent clothing. The gas is cut off, and you want me, and Mr. Ingram, you keep telling me that if I just do all these things later on in my life, mm-hmm. I'm going to be successful. But right now I live in a war zone. I don't see successful people around me. And so I've got to, when I'm talking with these young people, I'm trying to get them to see, what possibilities are. And they're saying to me, hey, Mr. Ingram, you don't know how I live. These are children. Mm-hmm. You don't know what my life is like. And then I tell them, you're right, I don't. Yeah, I don't know what it's like to not have a roof over my head. I don't know what that's like. I've never experienced that. My father made sure I had that, right? I don't know what it's like not to have a father. I always had that, right? I don't know what it's like to be hungry. Even at my age of 68 years old, I don't know about those things. But there are young people who experience those things, and I always ask them to raise their hands. I have a group of 40 kids, 45 kids, hey, raise your hand if you know somebody who's been shot. And when 95% of them raise their hands, I'm like, if somebody would ask my generation that, if one person raised their hands, I would have looked at them in disbelief. These are the realities that people and children are faced with. And we can tell them about, Johnny, just go to school and get an education and you'll get out of that. Mm-hmm. But we got to figure out a way to do something to heal them before they can even get to that point. Got to go to a break. I'll see you, CJ. We'll give you a chance on the other side. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number as Mondays. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And let's go to the phone lines. CJ, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy.
So what do you think about what we're talking about?
Well, first I want to commend you for the work you do, Earl. I think it's, you've lived it, you're living it, you see it more than I do, but I do care. There are people out here who do care. You're right, I guess I've never gone hungry, I've never been without a roof over my head, but I think it starts really with the family and what's preached to kids from day one, and we are the greatest land of opportunity. I believe there should be a safety net, but I think the first responsibility falls on the parents, and unfortunately, a lot of these kids don't have two parents in their lives, and I think education is the way out for a lot of these kids, but it's been I wouldn't say demonized, but it's been taken away from a lot of kids. And I believe school choice is a good possibility for some of these kids. So I agree with most of everything you gentlemen are talking about.
So you think the American dream is still as easily obtainable as it once was?
No, certainly not. And it's even harder just in the last few years.
So why? Why? Why?
Why is it harder?
Yeah.
I believe we're less safe in our communities. You can see videos of people being attacked for no reason today, all over on the street. Businesses are being vandalized.
So let me say this before Sandy comes in, CJ. At the root of those things, and what this nation better understand is that if it doesn't figure out a way to include more people in and give more people the American dream opportunities once again, you're not going to be able to have enough police officers and to make this place a safe place. You know, the answer is not more police. The answer is figuring out a way to give more people an opportunity of being successful in this country, Sandy.
Well, CJ, I think what you've said is altogether both intuitive and insightful. But one of the things you said, which is clearly true, is that families and the lack of families is a serious problem in our society. But then the question is, do we turn our back on the children who are unlucky enough to be born into a situation where that family backbone is lacking, or how does society deal with that situation? Because of course, one of the problems with being born into a family where there is no family backbone is that you don't have a family that's even probably going to help you select a school in a school choice program. Right now, the schools that are being able to be chosen by families are being chosen by families. And so most of the choice schools today have the benefit of having kids attend them where the family was interested enough in their child and in education for their child that they went out and actively pursued the process of entering a school of choice, so that we have St. Marcus School and we have Milwaukee College Prep and we have a number of schools who are quite successful, and I commend them. They are spectacular places, but they have the benefit of they aren't getting the average child, right? They aren't getting, it's not just a matter of potluck as to who they get to educate. They get children whose families are already committed to be participating, and those schools require that the families continue to participate in the education, which of course is addressing the very thing you describe. But public schools can't do that, and if every student had to go to a choice school, how would we compensate? How would we make up for the fact that many of them come from families that don't have that family backbone?
That's a really tough question, Sandy, and that is the big problem for sure. But I believe Ron Johnson is right. A lot of the answer is in faith, family, and education. And the mere fact that we're now having a harder time getting teachers, keeping teachers, getting police, keeping police, the lack of respect for authority is felt early on. You got teachers leaving because it's getting, I can't imagine, I have enough problems with my, when I had my own family, let alone 30 pupils.
Hey, CJ, faith, family, and education, that sounds all right, but the real issue is, why did the American dream go away?
I think, but in light of what the way CJ and I have been talking about it, the question for me is, how do you get children who are born into families without the backbone of faith, family, how do you get them into a situation where they have those ingredients and they have those ingredients sufficiently to help them select a school of choice? And the public school system was set up to deal with that very issue, to be an available source of education for everybody, regardless of whether they, you know, what their backgrounds were.
You know, part of this, Sandy and CJ, is that then people have to step in. It requires a more community engaged, involved reality,
right,
in order to make those things happen. Listen, hang on, CJ. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And before we come to Eugene, I want Sandy, let's talk a little bit about what we're talking about for people who are just joining us.
Well, we started out just talking about denial and the extent to which the American body politic has decided to talk, at least the substantial numbers of people in the American body politic, decided to talk about America in a wishful way rather than a factual way. And they're in denial about what the reality in America is. And one of the realities you brought up, I mean, I brought up early on the global climate change issue, and that's clearly, to some extent, at least a question of denial, because some people would want to deny that humans have anything to do with it or that humans should have anything to do with slowing it down, in spite of the catastrophic outcomes that we'll have if we don't slow it down. And then the second thing, however, we were talking about is the American dream and the lack of access to the American dream and the fact that the median income in America, meaning that 50% of the families in America earn $75,000 a year or less, and we've before parsed out the fact that on $75,000 a year, it's almost impossible to live the American dream in any metropolitan area in the United States, and that that American dream was the ownership of a home, the ownership of a relatively current car, the ability to take vacations, college for your kids if they wanted it, maybe a snowmobile.
Save a couple nickels.
Yeah, you could save some money on the side. You had health care because you had it through your workplace. You had security. You had safety and security. And if you just unbundle all those things today, they've all become much less accessible, much less certain. We don't have a social safety net that includes child daycare or child education or health care, for that matter. And we've got a workplace environment in which many people, that $75,000 a year is typically earned by two breadwinners. Typically, they'd be earning at or close to minimum wage. They're hourly paid workers. It's half of the American households. You know, I think there are a lot of people who would just in their mind decide that, well, those poor people who live at $75,000 or less, first of all, it's half of America. Second of all, demographically and ethnically speaking, African Americans make up 12% of the population. If they all, and they all don't, but if they all resided in that less than $75,000 a year median income, there's still 38%, that would make up 12%, there's still 38% of that group that is comprised of other people who are not living in the inner city and African American. So this is a broadside problem. It isn't just an ethnic problem. It's a broadside problem in our economy. It was correcting itself to some extent during this wage adjustment period in the last couple of years, because it's clear that the American business model has for too long been premised on underpaying people, both by paying them hourly rates that cannot sustain a family, and not employing them for sufficient hours to give them benefits, so that so many Americans are employed in jobs in which they are earning an hourly wage. They aren't being allowed to work more than 35 hours a week, so they don't get benefits. So that out of their meager wages, they must pay for health insurance or not have health insurance. And it's those kind of families that are in the less than $75,000 a year, less than median income group. So, you know, there's a lot of problems associated with the American economic model right now that will make it harder for Americans to achieve the American dream.
You know, Sandy, before we go to the phone lines, and so people in rural areas are struggling, who once before were able to obtain the American dream also, now they can't obtain the American dream. Their children can't obtain that American dream, and they're angry. And this is why this society is going to have to change, take a long, hard look at this, Sandy. And I kind of remember when businesses were saying, industry was saying, hey, we got to move overseas because we can't afford to pay the wages and benefits that we've been paying. And our bottom line, our stockholders, we aren't making enough money. And so, you know, the NAFTA came into, you know, existence, and so all of these things, and so over all these decades that NAFTA has been going on, businesses, many of them have gotten fat.
Well, NAFTA and the World Trade Agreement, NAFTA was really just North America, and that
right.
was just if we had only lost jobs to Mexico, we wouldn't there wouldn't be the same situation.
Yeah, but I meant the global.
Yeah, the global.
Yeah, the global thing.
But the fact is that what we're both talking about is the fact that within this less than median income, and actually you could go higher than the median income and still see families that struggle, right?
Yeah, right?
Because of college costs and because of all of the costs that families face, and health care costs in particular. So these families are frustrated and angry, and it crosses any sort of ethnic boundaries in terms of this group of frustrated people. And quite frankly, that's the group that has formed the basis for the Trump movement. It's also the frustrated part of the Democratic Party. There are lots of Americans who are frustrated with their current circumstance, who see a socioeconomic environment in which it's much harder for them to visualize not only the American dream for themselves, but for their children. And that lack of access to the American dream, we need to solve for it, or otherwise the America which we all wish for, even if it isn't a reality, either the ones that we objectify and wish for, like Ron Johnson, when he simply wishes away the problems by saying, well, all we need is more faith, and this will all solve for itself. We do need to, as a community, come to grips with it and go to work on the problems. And I don't know if CJ is still on the line, but it seems to me that everybody who calls in, one thing we ought to ask them is, are you willing to roll up your sleeves and participate in solving the problem? Because we aren't going to solve it by finger pointing.
Let's do this. Let's go to Gene. Thank you very much for holding, Gene. Good morning. What do you say?
Good morning, guys. This is just an outstanding program, as all of them are. But this one, really, you know, we need to define support system versus families, because we live in a world that grew up on Leave It to Beaver. And their family structure was your typical, supposedly typical American families. And I've worked in therapy and stuff with families, and, you know, and a lot of families break up for many, many reasons, and even wealthy families. So this thing about just having family and faith, and then what is faith? We need to pay attention to what faith is, because when I watch some of those big churches who are spreading hate, that's not faith. So we got to define our terms, what faith is, what support systems are, what needs are, and I think we could have better discussions. I think this is, you know, and it is reality versus you know, unfortunately, it's not fantasy, but it's, you know, you got to have hope and you got to have goals, but they got to be realistic goals within the framework of which we're living. And our living circumstances right now, as Sandy has said, has significantly changed and put people up with a lot of barriers. And I mean, I can even know I'm 67, and I made $4 an hour, and I paid for my room and board when I went to college, and it was really cheap, and it was like, you know, it was amazing. And now people's bills are beyond belief just to make it day-to-day in all different places where we live. But anyway, thank you for this. And I have to say one thing. I'm proud of CJ for not attacking. I don't like bullies. They turn me right off. And when he adds a conversation and asks questions, I think, thank you, CJ. We need everybody working on this problem and giving ideas, but not blaming or going after people. Thank you guys for the work you do.
Hey, Gene, thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. Let's go back to CJ. CJ?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so your thoughts, what Sandy just said about the fact that this is not, you know, an African American problem or issue as much as it is, again, just a large swath of this society that is just not able to make it through.
I would agree with that. That's part of my issue, why I feel like I want to be involved, and that's why I call in. And a lot of times you and I have gotten into arguments over what you think I'm trying to say, or maybe I don't explain my position very well sometimes. But I guess part of my issue is that I believe it is a societal problem, but I also, that's why the border issue bothers me so much, because a tremendous amount of our resources are going to go to citizens that got here illegally, and taking away from our own citizens, including the inner city problems that we have. I believe in a wall with a door. I think there's a right way and a wrong way. I question the work ethics of some of these kids everywhere, not inner city, rural, or anything. The best thing I did as a kid, my parents, we lived in a small town, but I got sent out to a friend of theirs farm. I worked out there since I was 8 years old every summer. And I learned a work ethic, and it was fun. That's been taken away. I don't like entitlement. I don't think the answer is the man or government. It really bothers me that people
let's unbundle some of that, because I, you know, obviously you're now expressing things that I think many people agree with, but we have to figure out, you know, you had the luck of living in a family that was that helped teach you the work ethic. You were sent to a farm. Your parents were smart enough to want you to go to a farm. You came from multiple generations of hardworking people. You had a role model to follow. You had all these things, which is actually being born, whether it's intergenerational wealth, no, but you're definitely born on second base, at least when one is born into the advantage of having all those kinds of at least social benefits handed to you. But now we have a bunch of children. We've got two different circumstances we're talking about here. One is the fact that it's economically more difficult to achieve the American dream. But the other factor is the one you've described, which is we have a bunch of people who aren't currently imbued with the work ethic, or you describe it as work ethic, with the social background, the family backbone, to give them what you had, which was this insight into how it is you can move forward in life by sacrificing today, working hard, having discipline. How do we do that? Because clearly, you say it's not the man can't do it. okay? But if families aren't doing it, then the community has to do it. And are you, you know, instead of us deciding to break ourselves down into parties and to point at the other party or the other political entity and say, you guys are screwing it up, and obviously government, one way or the other, isn't going to solve the problem, and it also isn't necessarily the problem. Can you... Should I? Now, Earl is, obviously, but don't you think that it's up to the communities ourselves, particularly those of us who have made it, to turn around and actually roll our sleeves up, not to point at the problem and say, you people don't have work ethic, but to figure out how to become involved in it?
So, CJ, hold the thought. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. There's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I was born in a city where the winter nights don't ever sleep. So this life's always with me.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And before we go to CJ, who do we have online too?
I haven't screened them yet. Just
put them on. Yeah. I think I know who that is. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good morning. Who
are we talking to?
Yeah, this is Dave from Milwaukee.
Yeah, Dave. All right. I thought that's who it was.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
As usual, great discussion. However, I want to interject some concern about the environmental aspect of this idea of the sanctity of the American dream. Is it just Americans that are entitled to the American dream? Shouldn't all the people in Africa, India, China have it? Is the American dream sustainable? As it is, the experts tell us that at our current rate of consumption, we need 3.5 Earths.
Well, you obviously make a good point. The American dream is, the way we described it, is a fairly materialistic thing. I think if we cut it down
exactly.
to a home, a vacation, and college for our kids, along with health care, and if we cut out the car aspect of it, you know, maybe the home, it gets redefined into something that's not quite as massive as the average American home used to be in terms of its average against the rest of the world. But still, you can take its various components. It basically describes a life of a comfortable life with some high quality components to
which
it.
Which is what all human right. beings, which is should be a birthright for all human beings.
You know, I remember, you probably remember too, images from China in the 70s and 80s, images on their streets. You never saw a car, but you saw thousands and thousands of people on bicycles.
Right.
And I remember at the time thinking, oh, you know, heaven help us if there comes a time when every one of those billion people in China wants a Cadillac. They want to be like Americans. And guess what? That time is upon us. And we're in big trouble.
Well, happily...
So I think we should...
You know, one thing, well, I've heard a couple of things and read a couple of things over the weekend that interested me. One of them is the fact that humans, we have such difficulty understanding exponential kinds of changes, and we always use a linear, we use a ruler, and we look at the current trends, and we disregard the extent to which market forces and human decisions will intervene they will take things in a different and possibly palliative direction, a direction that solves the problem. Today I heard on the radio a discussion in England about how electric bikes were becoming a huge staple, and that many people were starting to use electric bikes as an option to cars for getting to and from work. So maybe there's going to be a reversion to bicycles. They won't be necessarily the kind that have to be pedaled quite as hard as the ones that the Chinese were pedaling. But I think we should give some credit. I think we obviously have to ring the alarm bell so that people understand why they ought to make these innovative changes. But there are going to be innovative changes that are going to solve for a bunch of the problems that can at least give us some hope. We ought to understand that in the future, there lies things we don't know about, which can, on an exponential basis, change the arc of current events.
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. CJ, quickly.
I want to again thanks, Earl. I think you're doing it. You're unfortunately, these kids are getting to you when they should have been taught a lot of the things you're trying to teach them at a lot younger age. So I commend you. I actually want to support your group. And thank you, Sandy and Earl, for taking my call again.
You know, CJ, man, you know, thank you. You know, it's at the end of all of this, man, discourse is what's needed. And we as Americans have to understand the one thing we all have in common is we're Americans.
Well, I think even more than that, we're human beings.
Yeah.
You know? And so Americanism is something that's important, but increasingly you can see that humanity is something that's exceedingly important.
You know,
people are dying to get here.
Well, people are dying to get here, but you know, they're leaving something that where they hope that where they're coming is going to be better. But well, let's make sure that it is better. I mean, I think that the simple fact that people are desperate to leave where they are and come to America isn't necessarily proof that America is all that it could be. And so the reason I am willing to criticize America as it is I think we are not all we could be, and I think we should strive to be all that we could be, so that we, you know, and most corporations call that continual improvement, and I think America ought to involve itself in continual improvement, and I think you do too. I just think the question is we have trouble agreeing on the means, and maybe we have the trouble discussing the hows, and we have a better, it's easier for us to point fingers at the people who are in the way of improvement, right?
So at the root of all of this is I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican.
Well, that's the root of the problem, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and so we can't... And so
I disagree.
Well, I'm saying we can't come together for what we know is in the best interest of this nation. And what's in the best interest of this nation is that we give the American people, make sure that the American people get a fair shot. Why would we not want as many people in our country to get a fair shot at life as can be? Why would we be opposed to that?
See, I think CJ, let me just leap in before we think that we're disagreeing with one another. I think you agree with us. I think you stand for the proposition that every child born in America should have a birthright of having an opportunity to succeed like every other child. You would agree with that, wouldn't you? That would be your wish?
Very much so, and that's why I don't like this complacency of what's going on.
Well, but the complacency is something
that are going on.
But the complacency, let's say a child is born. First of all, we all have to agree that children don't get to choose who their parents are. So that whereas maybe parents can choose whether they have children or not, children have no choice, and children get born to wherever they get born. And a child who's born into a situation of complacency is born then into an environment that gives them less opportunity for success. And so then how do we deal with that?
So listen, got to go to a break. Bill, I see you. We'll certainly come to you on the other side. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.